most people believe in elves. They're not the cartoon type, they're tiny and sort of have a hat. They're sort of elf maidens and princes. More sort of like the elves in Lord of the Rings, that's sort of the elves in Icelandic folk history.
That was Helda Gunnar Thorstensson, an Icelandic MIT graduate student, and yes, she said elves. In Icelandic tradition, the story of their genesis goes like this.
One day, God made an unannounced visit to Adam and Eve. But because her children were dirty, Eve quickly hid them in a cupboard. God, knowing all, punished her and permanently hid her children by making them invisible. Their descendants thus became the hidden people, or elves.
We were caught off guard when our tour guide initially described Icelanders' relationship with these beings.
Pay them respect or they will do you some harm. If you pay them respect, they could even help you on a good day or a bad day, whatever. But if you are, for instance, mow the grass on the hill where they live, that will be a disaster for you.
Do lots of people believe in the elves, or?
Yes, you mean still today? Yes. Yeah. Well, and those that don't believe in them, they respect them. I am the respectful one.
The Icelandic government also is respectful of the elves. Elf experts are consulted to make sure that construction projects do not disturb these inhabitants of the land.
Another tour guide told us about her experience with elves.
I was once traveling in the east coast of Iceland. It was midsummer. You know, it never gets dark during the summertime. And I was hiking in the 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. And I parked the car. I closed the car with the key. I put the key in the pocket and we walk. We came back to the car. I opened the car and we sat into the car and the key was absolutely gone. And we look all over, all around. So I said, the only thing we can do is wait a little. Just wait a little. I know they will give it back. They are just drilling us, or you know. So we wait a little bit and then I turn my head under and look where the key was supposed to be, and there was the key, you know, moving. I cannot explain that. What was it? And I can also tell you that this night, I could feel something in the air.
Sitting here in urban America, it seems difficult to believe in feeling something in the air, but after being in Iceland, I can almost understand. In some ways, belief in the elves is a manifestation of the deep connection Icelanders have with the land. Armand Gillison, a professor at Reykjavik University, explained.
So I think people really do believe in all kinds of things, you know, not only sort of spiritual things, you know, either related to oceans or the land, you know.
One day, we visited Gullfoss, a two-tiered waterfall encased in ice. I paused as I climbed the cliff walls, with water roaring below. Then and there, I could imagine being with our tour guide, standing by her car, feeling the hairs on the back of my neck standing straight up, knowing that the landscape in Iceland is slightly more alive than in most places.
Iceland is split down the middle by the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, a border between two of the giant sheets of the Earth's crust called plates. Our trek across the country brought us to Thingvellir National Park, a geological landmark where part of the ridge comes above water. Most of us clomped down a trail of packed snow, but I noticed one of our professors stopped to inspect the high rock walls that jutted up on either side of us.
I think it's just spectacular to be able to walk on a ridge system, basically, that comes to the surface. Normally, you'd have to be in a submarine to see this, and it's great to be able to walk on it.
That was Dr. Sam Bowring, a geologist at MIT. He was eager to explain the fortress-like cliffs looming over us. He told me that we were standing at the spreading center of the rift, the place where the two plates are moving apart.
We are looking at the actual outcrop of the mid-ocean ridge system at the surface of the Earth. This is the active spreading center right here.
This kind of concerned me. I wasn't too keen on the idea of the land beneath my feet ripping apart and leaving me to plummet into a dark abyss. But Dr. Bowring assuaged those fears.
Yes, the plates move at about the same rate as your fingernails grow.
But as Desiree will tell you, here in Iceland, the Earth doesn't always move that slowly.
Actually, it's been only 35 years since a volcano erupted on Heimaey, a tiny island south of Iceland.
In 1973, we had a eruption here on the island, and the island became 2.2 square kilometers bigger than it was. A fissure opened on the east part of the island, and this mountain you're going to go to, it's 35 years old.
The mountain our tour guide was talking about is called Eldfell, and we were given the chance to climb it. It didn't appear too tall, and the climb didn't seem to be too steep, but it wasn't the terrain that we should have been worried about. It was the 70-mile-an-hour winds. Todd was crazy enough to record himself as he climbed.
This is Terrascope's ascent of the 35-year-old volcano on Heimaey. And it's made unpleasant by the snow, and more importantly, the rocks. My hat has now been blown in front of my face.
And we thought that volcanoes were only fierce when they were erupting. After we fought our way up and back down, our tour guide recounted someone else's funny experience with Eldfell not too long ago. Apparently, the rocks in the volcano's crater are still hot enough to cook what's known as lava bread. In the 1980s, the King of Spain visited Heimaey and wanted to try some.
When we make bread in the lava, you know, we take the dough, we put it into a milk box and wrap it with aluminium foil. Then we dig a small hole in the crater and leave the packets there for like 4 or 5 hours. Now, in 1987, when the King of Spain, he came here, one of the things on his schedule was to go up there and eat lava bread. But then, like an hour before they were supposed to go up there, the mayor, he got the news that the bread thing had been forgotten. So he called the local baker and asked him to take a bread he already had made. Then when the mayor went up, he was very proud when he opened the packets in front of everybody's eyes. But when he opened it up, the bread was sliced.
I think the funniest part is trying to imagine a king fighting his way through 70-mile-an-hour winds for a loaf of bread.
Iceland is a land of windswept barren terrain, towering mountains, and flat plains. In most places, grass and moss are the tallest plants. As an Icelandic joke goes, if you're lost in an Icelandic forest, your best solution is to just stand up. The Earth itself seems to be alive. Volcanoes erupt sporadically, spewing out lava and ash. Steaming water blasts out of geysers. At night, the northern lights paint the sky with ribbons of green and red. Much of the country's past is rooted in Icelanders' struggles with these surreal surroundings, from the folktale stories of trolls living in remote mountains to the abundant fish swimming in the oceans. The landscape has shaped Icelandic history. Iceland's 300,000 people form a tightly knit society, and the Icelanders are justifiably proud of their country. We mingled with some Icelandic college students who were willing to show their pride with this rendition of their national anthem.
O land Norsku.
This was a production of Terrascope Radio, a class developed by the MIT Terrascope Program in collaboration with the MIT Program in Comparative Media Studies. This piece was written, voiced, and produced by Desiree Amadeo, David Anderson, Adam Bockley, Tracy Hayes, Kelly Huang, Emily Moberg, Todd Mooring, and Juliana Velez. We'd like to thank our instructor, Ari Epstein, and teaching fellow, Emily Davidson, as well as Deborah Axel and Ruth Weinrib in the Terrascope office. We would also like to thank the faculty and staff of Reykjavik University, especially Gunnar Thomason, Kristen Sverresdottir, Sigrun Thorgeirsdóttir, and Sandra Nielsen for the organization of our Icelandic expeditions. We hope you enjoyed the show.